Well, the Summit County Council meets in work session Wednesday starting at about 1:40 at the Sheldon Richens Building. In the studio, I have Assistant Summit County Manager Jana Young, and on the phone with me, I have Sustainability Manager Lisa Yoder. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, Jana, let's start with you. An agenda, a lot of presentations, fairly routine approvals. Is there going to be a full council here, or is it because Tom's away? Or
yeah, full council will be there. Not really sure why the agenda is structured this way, just some items that we have to get done.
So. Okay. The entry gate of the trails at Jeremy Ranch, will that be discussed in closed session?
I don't know what's on the closed session agenda. I know that after the public hearing last council meeting, they did want to have some further discussion about it. So whether it's this time or next time, I'm not really sure what that the item is on closed session.
Okay. So do we know if the council will take action on this by the end of the month?
I think they're planning on it.
Okay.
Yeah.
Let's see. Seven applicants for one position on the Snyderville Basin Recreation Board. That's encouraging. The council's scheduled to make a decision on that soon?
Yep. Mm-hmm.
At their meeting tomorrow?
Yeah. So generally, they'll do the interviews prior to the meeting and then approve who they'd like to appoint at that same meeting.
Okay. Then let's see, a discussion on the Summit County Fair. Any changes for the first post-Travis Fair?
So two things that I think are unique to this year's fair, just briefly to share with your listeners. The fair will take place August 3rd through 10th, the Summit County Fairgrounds in Colville. Unique this year is a partnership we have between the fair and the county's Emergency Management Program. So typically in the fall, our emergency manager hosts a preparedness fair to provide information to residents and how they can plan and prepare for any type of disaster. Well, this year, they decided to actually host that at the fair as a way to boost the attendance. And so on August 10th, after the parade, people who attend the county fair can also see some safety demonstrations and pick up critical information on how to keep themselves and their families safe in the event of an emergency. The other unique thing about this fair that we must mention, as you alluded to, is Travis English, our fair director for the past 6 years, has resigned from the county to pursue an opportunity in Salt Lake, passing on the torch to Tyler Orgill, who is a North Summit resident and native of Colville, who worked very closely with Travis on the fair for the past 3 years. And we are very excited to have Tyler on our team. He's doing a great job picking up the reins and carrying momentum forward on this year's fair. He is also continuing to work with Kate and Michelle, who run the Park City Market, who have also been critical partners. So, you know, it's going to be an exciting fair. We have all the same events that you're used to seeing with the carnival, the demolition derby, the PRCA rodeo, live music, baking contest, fine arts and home art show, and then, of course, our livestock auction, which some folks might not know actually is one of the largest grossing livestock auctions in the country. So really exciting to see these kids actually get some money for college and what they've done with those animals.
Okay. Are we still offering free transit then?
Yes. Thanks for bringing that up. Definitely want to remind folks, especially who live on this side of the county, that there is free transportation from Park City to and from the fair that is hosted and sponsored by the Park City Chamber of Commerce Visitors Bureau.
Okay.
So very easy to get there.
Yeah. Do we know times and things like that? And
I think they run pretty frequently. I'd have to actually give you that schedule, but I think they're on a cycle of maybe every 20 minutes or so.
Okay. Let's see. Also, the presentation with regard to the economic impact report from the 2019 Sundance Film Festival. You'll hear from Betsy Wallace of the Sundance Institute. God, this comes, what, a month later after the presentation to Park City? Just scheduling, or?
Yeah, I imagine that's what happened here. You know, typically at this time of the year, the Sundance Institute does present to the council the economic impact of the film festival that happened that January. It's an event we look forward to every year. The council is very supportive of the Sundance Film Festival. In fact, every year they do give the institute a grant from our Recreation Arts and Parks local sales tax grant program. In 2018, They got about 80,000 from that program, as well as 180,000 from our restaurant program. So it's always important for the council to be able to see the benefits of the festival from this perspective in terms of dollars and cents, what was generated in our local sales tax, the attendee spending on things like lodging, transportation, meals, and entertainment, the jobs that were created, the number of attendees, that type of thing. So we do look forward to hearing from them.
Yeah. I mean, how does the county contribute at all with the organization of Sundance?
Well, financially, it's generally through these grant programs. These are sales taxes from restaurants and that goes into promoting tourism. And so there's a really good nexus, obviously, between what we can spend those monies on and what the Sundance Film Festival does. So that they're giving the film festival around $260,000 to $305,000 a year through this grant program that helps support what they do.
Okay. Just a heads up that we had a report that there is a crash eastbound I-84 there, about 2 miles east of Morgan. Both directions, traffic are being diverted off of exit 108, so you can expect some delays there. Expected not to be cleaned up for about another 2 hours. So if you're headed I-84 eastbound, towards Ogden, again, a heads up that you will be diverted off of the highway. Let's see, Lisa Yoder, you will be making a presentation announcing the launch of the SCPW solar program. We spoke with Ryan Anderson with Utah Clean Energy yesterday. Anything news here?
The exciting news is that the program is launching again. This has been a highly successful program that we ran in 2013 and 2016. So as Ryan probably told you earlier, the program provides a bulk purchase discounted pricing on solar for those who participate. It's a great way for residents in Summit and Wasatch County to join council's initiative to transition to 100% renewable energy by 2032.
Yeah, so I thought SCPW had kind of gone away. What's the role with SCPW? It still exists?
Yes, Summit Community Power Works, SCPW, has gone through a couple of reiterations until we got to this fantastic partnership today that SCPW programs are now run by Utah Clean Energy, the nonprofit whose work over the past 20 years has been on advocating for clean energy in Utah.
So is there even an SCPW board anymore, or has it just been absorbed by Utah Clean Energy?
Well, there's an advisory board of Summit County representatives that serve the Utah Clean Energy Board of Directors. So we give input to them, but Utah Clean Energy is responsible for carrying out the SCPW programs in Summit County to achieve our goals.
Yeah. Does the county subsidize that at all?
We do fund a portion. We do pay for the program implementation of this solar program, as we have in the past. Yes.
Okay. So how is this going to be different? Because things have changed in the solar world from, say, 2013.
Well, the big difference is the price of solar keeps coming down. So again, we're looking at a 20% discount roughly over market rate, and market rate has come down for solar panels. The other difference is a slight decrease in the net metering rate from Rocky Mountain Power. This is probably the last year that the net metering rate that people get back for overproduction from their system will be as good as it is. The Public Service Commission and rates will be changing next year, so this is the great time to get solar on your roof if that's your desire.
Yeah, what about the tax credits from state and federal government? How do those compare with what we saw 6 years ago when the first bulk buy was announced?
The tax credit, I believe, is still right around 26 to 30%. I'm not sure if it dropped yet, but next year it will start dropping a certain percent per year until it expires. So again, this is the last year that we see the best of the incentives for the purchase of rooftop solar.
All right. Is there a goal here in terms of how many rooftops you put solar on? Or?
Yeah, the goal is 150 rooftops.
Okay.
We've done last time we installed 110, so we're shooting for a few more.
Yeah. Is there still interest in it out there, you think?
Oh, yes. That's why we're running it again. We've been asked to repeat the program, so we're bringing it back.
Okay. Anything else you want to tell us about that?
Go to scpwsolar.org beginning July 30th and take the solar survey, meaning that you get into the queue for a solar contractor who's been fully vetted through a request for proposal process to come to your house and give you an estimate specific to your property.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Lisa.
You're welcome. Thanks for having me.
Lisa Yoder is the sustainability manager for Summit County. Back to Jana Young, the assistant Summit County manager. Let's take a look at the rest of the agenda here. The Mountain Regional Impact Fee Analysis Report really looks like the presentation suggesting that the impact fee will likely be about the same as it was in 2014. So no adjustments for the cost of inflation, huh?
Well, so this is what's interesting about this item and what exactly the council is being asked to approve. So just briefly, Mountain Regional Water is a special services district that the council or the commission created in 2000 to unify, repair, and upgrade many of our water systems. And so as the governing body of this district, the council must approve things for them in order to implement from time to time. And this week is one of those situations. So every 3 to 5 years, the district is required by state statute to update their impact fee facility plan. The last time they did that was in 2014, and so they're due to update it this year. What that plan does is it outlines what the district plans to build over the next 10 years, what new growth demands they expect on their system, how much water they will allocate to new customers, and the cost of that. So the district's administrative control board is actually the body that approves new rates and fees, and so they'll be the ones that actually approve that. What the council is being asked to do is approve the components that go into the analysis that determines those new fees. And those components are how much water a customer needs, new growth expected on the system, new projects the district is planning to serve that growth, and the cost of those projects. So those are the items that will be presented to the council tomorrow and
the
that they're
IRC
asking
keeps
approval for.
Okay. And then also, there's some policies being talked about. Anything new there? Or just housekeeping?
It's just housekeeping. Basically, some administrative updates. You know, the district, Mountain Regional Water, got a new general manager, and he wanted to review everything and found some inconsistencies with county policy and just some things that needed to be updated.
All right. And then convening as the governing board of the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District, the council scheduled to look at a trail easement in the Jeremy area requiring agreements with the school district and the water reclamation district. Let me see. No, it's mm-hmm. with the, yeah.
That's right.
Basin. So is this a permanent trail or just something being put in place for the Jeremy Roundabout project?
So this is a great example of a win-win-win type of project, which we don't often see in local government. So to explain what this is, as part of the Jeremy Ranch Interchange Roundabout project that is underway right now, the county needed a wetland delineation area and approached the Park City School District about using their land for that purpose. The school district was interested in helping the county in this way, but asked that we help them mitigate some traffic in the area. At the same time, the Snyderville Basin Special Recreation District had already decided to do a trail in the area, so the three entities came together and decided to help each other out. So the county agreed to build a trail to provide an alternative route for pedestrians and bikes from the Jeremy Ranch Elementary School to Rasmussen Underpass to address those traffic concerns, as well as help Basin Rec establish their recreational trail, and also to make it safer, particularly for kids who were traveling by foot or bike in this area. So the county will build the trail, and then the Basin Rec will maintain it. In order to build this trail, though, it has to go over land that the county doesn't own. It's owned by the Park City School District as well as the Snyderville Basin Water Reclamation District. And so in order to complete the trail in this area, the council has to approve easement and access agreements with both entities. So that's what they're looking at tomorrow.
Okay. And then let's see. Later on, about 6:20, a presentation regarding shared mental health challenges among resort communities. Really a panel here. Is this anything new information here? Or?
Well, so the many of the nonprofits in the area related to mental health issues are funded by the CATS Foundation. So council members invited these nonprofit leaders to present on a recent meeting they all attended in Boulder to collaborate and bring new ideas to the community. So that's what this presentation's about.
Okay. Let's see. After last week's discussion, any further progress on the county's public lands project for wildfire prevention and watershed protection?
So we have reached out to the U.S. Forest Service to get a list of some of those shovel-ready projects that they have referred to us that have made it through the environmental process to better understand what we're looking at. We're waiting for that, and then I'm also trying to arrange a work session or meeting with all of the entities who have an interest or are working on watershed protection issues to talk about what our long-term vision is, what our limitations are, and what really we need to be asking for in terms of funding from the federal government and the state government. And that will probably happen sometime in August.
Okay. Anything else you wanted to mention?
Yeah, just quickly, there will be an amendment to the agenda later today. There's going to be a joint resolution between Summit County and Park City that the council will consider regarding State Road 248. And the environmental analysis that UDOT put out around that. This has been out for public comment, and it just ended on July 12th. The councils were interested in providing a unified statement to UDOT that their preferred alternative visioned in that environmental analysis does not align with Park City and Summit County goals and policies and objectives around multimodal options for that corridor. So that will also be coming up. And then lastly, last night, a very exciting event in Colville. North Summit Recreation had a groundbreaking event on a new park that they're building there. And this is phase one of a master plan that also includes some soccer fields and other recreational amenities for North Summit. Very exciting for us because Colville doesn't have anything like that right now.
Yeah. So they're also looking for a mill tax increase this fall. Mm-hmm. I mean, where did they get the money to do that then?
So this was also part of our RAP Recreation Grant Program, which is the Recreation Arts and Parks Program that's generated from a sales tax. It's been several years in the making, and it's been a great partnership between Colville City, the North Summit Recreation District, the county and the school district, and the county has supported it with this grant.
Okay. And then with regard to that 248 resolution, so it's still being drafted. Is that why?
Yeah, it was kind of, I wasn't privy to all those conversations, so I don't know what the delay was, but I imagine it's related to the timing of the public comment ending around the 12th and the council's getting together to massage what they want to say.
Okay. Assistant Summit County Manager Jana Young, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:27. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW. It's 8:32 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, as we've reported, Summit County selected the University of Utah to provide behavioral health services in Summit County starting September 1st. In the studio with details about how to learn more about this at a couple of open houses this week, I have Summit County Director of Behavioral Health, Aaron Newman, along with from the University of Utah Health Plan Senior Medicaid Program Manager, Tracy Altman. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Aaron, let's start with you and have you just give us a little bit of background about how we got here.
Well, about a year ago, we began looking at where we were in terms of services here in our community, identifying gaps. We did the community assessment. We created the Summit County Strategic Plan for Mental Wellness. And part of that, we realized we really hadn't gone out to bid to see what other services were out there since at least 2003, if not earlier. So we decided no matter what happened, we were going to go out to bid and just see what other resources were out there. We went through that process and through a committee really reviewing it, made a community members, the different bids, presentations, the decision was made for the University of Utah Health Plan to be the new network provider. What we were really excited with that is, and this is the reason why we're having these open houses, it's a new way of providing services in our community. It's a network where we're able to use existing clinicians versus being limited to just contracting with one entity. And so that almost instantaneously in some cases, quadrupled the amount of clinicians that we have access to for our community in terms of medication management, outreach treatment. It also brings to bear all of the resources that the University of Utah has, such as the University Neuropsychiatric Institute, or UNI as most people know it, and having access to their resources from here in our community.
All right. Does that cost more money?
Nope. It's the same amount of funds.
Okay. So what we're doing now, though, is making that transition between the current contract of Valley Behavioral Health and the U. So how's that going?
It's going well. Tracy's really been the one spearheading that, and I'll let her talk more.
So right now we're in the process of transitioning. We do have a clinic that we're working on where UNI will have a presence up here. But again, this open house that we have going on tomorrow on Wednesday from 4 to 6:30 and Thursday from 11 to 2 at the Park City Library, we're hoping to be able to get more of the community providers up here in Summit County contracted for our network. Our intent is to include the community as much as possible. We are looking to UNI to provide safety net services where they are needed. But essentially, our model has always been to have community networks. And we know that there are great providers that are in this community that want to support this community. And we've had a lot of interest.
Okay, so that's who these two open houses are for.
Yes, for providers, mental health, behavioral health providers, substance use providers, their office staff, their anyone who is interested who is in that field.
How difficult is it to become part of the U network?
It's not very difficult at all. We have a simple process for credentialing. It's with CAQH, which is a national credentialing, and a lot of organizations, a lot of health plans will use that. And so if you've already used that, it makes it a lot easier for you to be able to be credentialed. We have a simple contract. It's very cut and dried. It's a lot easier to negotiate. Because we are local, you don't have to worry about a national entity that you have to run through the contract with. And we have great contract specialists that work with you, and we also have great provider specialists, provider services representatives that work with you in the area that are all local.
Yeah. So on the back end, though, for these providers, I mean, does that mean a little bit more work in terms of adding more kind of, I mean, it's kind of like an insurance, right, that you're adding?
So Medicaid is not an insurance per se, but it is a health program. And so they would be billing to us like they would to an insurance company. And so in that sense, it does seem a lot like insurance. The difference is that it's all regulated through the state. And so there are certain rules that we all have to follow. There are requirements where we have to pay within 30 days. We actually get dinged if we don't. So there are certain rules that we have to follow as well to ensure that we are paying appropriately, that we are following those guidelines. We work very well with providers. We have other providers in other parts of the state that I can actually have these providers talk to if they would like to see what it's like to be a provider with us. Some of the providers, because we also offer commercial plans, they can talk to some of the other providers who may not be familiar with University of Utah health plans, and they can see what it's like to work with us right now. We are open. We are transparent. We want to be able to work with providers and have this be a good experience.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, too, I think from a community perspective as well, the more providers we can get in this network, not only for our Medicaid clients, this also helps address some of our strategic initiatives in the strategic plan, where we want to increase the total number of people taking insurance. And so by coming and being part of this University of Utah network, not only do they have access then to the Medicaid clients and the unfunded clients from our state-funded accounts, but also then they're paneled with the system can take UUHP's insurance. And that means it's all through one simple mechanism of billing straight to them.
Right.
Okay. So is that Medicaid, is that for people without insurance? I mean, so you would see referrals then from like the People's Health Clinic? Is that how it works?
It depends. You have to qualify. And a lot of that qualification right now is where some folks are in flux as waiting to hear back from the federal government on which one of the state waivers they're going to accept for the Medicaid expansion. Right now, we're working under what's called the bridge waiver, which has reduced the accessibility in terms of financial from 138% of the poverty rate down to 100% of the poverty rate. So we do have a new sort of underfunded population that we're going to have to deal with of individuals that are within that 100% to 138% of the poverty, which in the past have been covered by Medicaid and now have to find their own insurance.
And just to be clear, this network that we're looking at contracting right now would be for Medicaid. We are looking at speaking with individuals who may be interested in dealing with that underfunded group as well, but this initial contract is for Medicaid.
All right. How many more providers would you like to see? I guess maybe, Aaron, this is to you. How would you like to see?
I mean, just to be honest, I'd love to see if we can get everyone that we can here involved in the network. At the end of the day, that's what truly benefits our community. It reduces our wait times. It really helps address the needs. But then also, it creates it helps address the stigma. We have a lot of people in this community that qualify for Medicaid. And for a multitude of reasons, they feel like they can handle it on their own. They're embarrassed to go towards it. The more we sort of mainstream people accessing Medicaid as a county, that's better for us because that's more revenue coming in to help with these services. Honestly, with the expansion happening, we're going to have a lot of unknown until we're actually set with the federal government on which waiver they're approving and we can move forward with that. But some of the areas, we've been very lucky in that a lot of our nonprofits in this community have stepped up and are seeing these clients either on scholarships or pro bono or finding sliding scale means, which really they can be covered under Medicaid. So if we can get that on that program, that's additional revenue for those clinicians. And then also if we can get them paneled with the U, that helps in the accessing those funds.
Okay. Go ahead.
We have about 75 providers, behavioral health providers within Summit County. We would love to get them contracted. I don't know how many of those would be willing to. We have currently about 20 to 30 that have RSVP'd for the open houses, which is a pretty good number. We would love to see more. We're hoping that they would like to come out and at least have questions answered. Be interested in a contract. The more that we have, that spreads out the Medicaid population as well. So that helps too.
Okay. So we're talking like therapists. Is that who you're mm-hmm. reaching
We're talking
out to?
Therapists, psychologists, yes.
Mm-hmm. And would they receive the same amount of money as they would any other way through Medicaid?
So they would receive approximately the same amount of money as they would through a Medicaid contract. So, yes. Medicaid is not known for its high reimbursement, unfortunately, which is why we also are aware of the fact that we don't want anyone to have a substantial amount of their business to be Medicaid. That's why the more providers that we have, the more that they're able to spread that out. And then that way they're doing something really good for their community. They're helping their neighbors. They're helping people within the community. But they're also able to have a successful practice.
All right. How are these open houses going to be formatted? It's just come and bring your questions?
They're great. They're very casual. You come and bring your questions. We even have, because this is a new model for Summit County, Summit County has been a staff model where Valley Behavioral was the only provider for behavioral health, and this is a new model. The state has actually offered to come in. They are going to be here to talk about fee-for-service Medicaid and what it's like to be a Medicaid provider as well. And we have Connect that's going to be there as well to talk about their services. We just have a lot of people that want to be able to answer questions. We'll have some food, nothing too crazy, but because it is the library, so we want to be respectful. But we want to be able to answer questions, have you meet our folks, and just get to know us.
Okay, so it'll be upstairs in the community, third
yes.
floor community room? Okay, so two again, just hoping to meet people's schedules, I guess. They're basically the same thing. Wednesday,
right.
4 to 6:30 in the afternoon, and then Thursday, 11 to 2 over the lunch hour.
You got it.
Okay, anything else you want people to know?
No, I think the only thing I'd say is for individuals listening that are currently on Medicaid, there's going to be a series of letters they'll be receiving. Their first one should be received this week from the state Medicaid office, just letting them know that we are in this process of transition and that their coverage will be moving from Valley Behavioral Health to the University of Utah Health Plans.
Okay. Aaron, Tracy, thanks for your time this
morning.
Thank
you.
844, good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, Recycle Utah presents its annual 100-mile meal next month. In the studio with details, I have Recycle Utah Executive Director Carolyn Moore, along with Executive Chef of Park City Mountain, Alex Malmore. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
Good morning.
Let's start with you first, Carolyn. Just when and where is this happening?
Sure. We have our fourth annual 100-mile meal coming up on August 10th. It'll be from 5 until 8:30. It's held at a private ranch on Oakley. It's a beautiful property. This event's all about food within 100 miles of the recycling center. It celebrates eating local and reducing our carbon footprint. By eating local food, you can decrease your carbon footprint by like 11%. So that's kind of like taking the bus a ton or changing some other habits in your life. This event's sponsored by Epic Promise and Gallery Mar. And we feature live music, lawn games. We have a cocktail hour. I give a really short talk. It's more about enjoying the food and celebrating eating local. And we do get about 25 or more farmers to donate their food. So all the food's, again, local. So we're featuring some food from like Bill White, Canyon Meadows Ranch, Kodiak Cakes, Beehive Cheese, and Alpine Distillings doing all the cocktails. And one funny thing we learned last year with the cocktails is that you can't really find like soda water locally. So we get tap water and use a soda stream to make our soda water for the cocktails. So kind of a funny touch on how we really work hard to keep it local. And then we reduce our plastic bottle water consumption too by using a soda stream. So kind of a funny part of the event, local water even. Mm-hmm. We add bubbles to it. So.
Okay, and I was going to say, it's a fundraiser for you, right?
Right. And a good thing about this event, because Epic Promise chefs come in and cook all the food, and we get all the food donated, the majority of the $200 ticket goes back to Recycle Utah. And this helps us fund a lot of our operations, you know, sending bins to be recycled. On average, every load we send down to Salt Lake costs $200, so each ticket will pay for a load to get recycled. So it helps us do what we do. If you want to come on and support us, you can buy a table of eight for $1,500. And we do expect this ticket to be sold out. So if you're thinking about it, I would encourage you to buy a ticket probably this week or next. I think we're down to 50 or less tickets. So
Yeah. Well, that's a good thing that the food's being donated, because we know that local food costs more.
Right. Yeah.
And that just seems so uncanny, just because it's not put on a mass production. Is that why?
Yeah, that's interesting. It's definitely the mass production issue. It's that the small local farmers, they have to make a certain amount of money to basically sustain their business. And the big, huge farms in California and Mexico, they do it on such a larger scale that they can lower their prices. It's kind of the Walmart effect, I guess.
Yeah. So you're going to be preparing the food there?
Yeah. Okay. So we'll do a lot of the prep at Legacy Lodge in Park City, and then we'll bring it all over on Friday night, and usually myself and the other chefs, we spend the night there Friday night and then get up super early and get stuff on the smoker and the rotisserie and ready to go by the time people get there Saturday evening.
Okay, you and a team of how many for?
It'll be five of us total, back of house chefs, and then we'll have a whole team of volunteer servers and bussers and bartenders and that kind of thing. But yeah, five cooks.
Yeah. How many are you serving? Do you know?
200, I think, right?
Yep. And we do invite all the farmers. If a farmer donates some of their food, they do get to come enjoy the dinner with the guests. And that tends to be a really good experience, having the farmer, you know, saying, hey, that's my, you know, arugula. Hey, that's my, you know, beef that I donated. So it's a really good experience, really celebrating the work local farmers do in our community.
Yeah, it's really cool when the food that we serve gets to tell a story of like where it comes from, and the people that grew it or raised it are right there eating dinner too. And it's just a really cool environment. It's one of the most fun events we do all year.
Yeah. What's on the menu?
Well, we got a bunch of stuff this year. We're going to start things out with some hors d'oeuvres. We're going to do some blue cheese from Gold Creek Farms. We're going to make beignets out of it and serve it with an apricot chutney. We're going to do a smoked Utah trout and potato croquette. We got a whole bunch of really nice beef briskets donated from Bill White Farms and Canyon Meadows Ranch. So we're going to do a smoky Utah stone fruit beef brisket, and we're going to kind of cover it in like sliced plums and slow smoke it and roast it that way. The dessert is this really cool dessert we've been working on. It's a cake that you make with sweet corn. So you roast the corn, you cut it off the cob, and you puree it, and you mix it with flour and some baking soda and usually sugar, but we're going to use honey because honey's local, sugar's not, with some raspberry compote and some homemade creme fraiche ice cream.
Wow, I'm hungry. and again, so you spend, you're going to spend the day before kind of prepping and then
Yeah, we'll prep
it all out
at the resort.
Saturday.
And then we'll load our truck and we'll bring it out to the ranch. And then we'll all basically camp out on the ranch because we have to wake up super early on Saturday morning to get like the brisket smoking and that kind of thing. So it's usually a fun night the night before too.
Yeah, so we got local plums already.
Yeah.
Ripe.
Yep, we do.
Okay. All right. Let's see. Anything else you guys? I mean, this is something that you said that one of your favorite, events of the year. Why is that?
I think we really like the challenge of it. It's hard to, know exactly what ingredients you're going to get based on what's going to be ready at that particular point in time and what's going to be ripe. So basically the farmers, we reach out to all the farmers. They get us a list of all the stuff that they're willing to donate. And then we get to put the menu together. So we have this whole list of ingredients and kind of me and the other chefs sit down and we have a brainstorming session on what goes with what and how we're going to use this. And it's just a really cool opportunity to showcase our creativity and then see it all come together out in this beautiful, beautiful ranch up in Weber Canyon.
Okay. And that's something that your supporters actually really enjoy.
Right. I think it's a nice way to get out of town. It's out in Oakley. It gets out of town. And then eating local and really spreading the word about our community and what we do. It's been a great event. And then our partnership with Upper Promise has been really great. They give back to the community in like three different ways with volunteerism, Commitment to Zero, and the Epic Promise Employee Foundation. And one of their Commitment to Zero is about net zero waste to landfill by 2030, which is something that aligns really well with Recycle Utah. So something that definitely aligns well with us to partner up with Epic Promise for something like this.
Okay. Again, you say you have a limited number of the single seats left.
Yeah, I think we probably two tables and about 50 tickets left. So if you're thinking about it, it is time to make. I know Park City is a little bit last minute, but we expect this to sell out. And again, we with five chefs, we can only serve so many people. So we are not going to expand upon our capacity.
Okay. RecycleUtah.org, right on the homepage.
Yep, tickets right on the homepage, RecycleUtah.org. We'd love to see you there.
Anything else?
No.
Good.
Thank you.
No. All right, Carolyn and Alex, thanks for your time this morning.
Thank you.
You're listening to the Local News Hour here on KPCW. News time now, 8:52.